تقيا مقيما شمالا جنوبا.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. He joined Ibn Battuta on his travels again, this time as he finds himself in Syria's Damascus. In Damascus, one of his first stops was the Great Mosque, which stands today. He reflected on his pragmatic adaptiveness.
Friday Mosque, known as the Umayyad Mosque, is the most magnificent in the world, the finest in construction, and the noblest in beauty, grace, and perfection.
Understand that masajid were community centers as well as houses of worship. The first ones had been sheltered spaces where the community could come together, not only for prayer, but also to discuss public issues. Friday, or congregational mosques, where the faithful of a whole city or quarter came together to pray, occupied prime locations, and made those locations the most prestigious parts of the city. Near Friday Mosque and its madrasas, one could find both the finest wares and the intellectual professionals. Ibn Battuta's description of the Umayyad Mosque continues.
The eastern door, called Bab Jannatain, is the largest of the doors in the mosque. It has a large passage leading out to an extensive colonnade, which is entered through a quintuple gateway between six tall columns. Along both sides of this passage are pillars supporting circular galleries, where the cloth merchants, among others, have their shops. Above these are long galleries, in which are the shops of the jewelers and the booksellers and makers of admirable glassware. In the square adjoining the first door are the stalls of the principal notaries, in each of which there may be five or six witnesses in attendance and a person authorized by the Qadi to perform marriage ceremonies. Near these bazaars are the stalls of the stationers who sell papers, pens and ink. To the right, as one comes out of the Jairun door, which is called the door of the hours, is an upper gallery shaped like a large arch, within which are small open arches furnished with doors to the number of hours of the day. These doors are painted green on the inside and yellow on the outside. As each hour of the day passes, the green inner side of the door is turned to the outside. There is a person inside the room responsible for turning them by hand.
Between the lines of Ibn Battuta's brief descriptions, you will notice that his admiration for good examples of physical and administrative infrastructure expresses his belief that it is not merely the strength of the ruler that undergirds the stability and prosperity of the state, but also the extent to which the state's infrastructure is developed. This is apparent not only in Ibn Battuta's frequent notes of state roads, water, sanitation, and hospitals, but also in his observation of what might be called moral infrastructure, the relationship of the local ulama and the rich with society at large, the willingness of the local scholarly class to work with the government to achieve political stability. He comments on the government's encouragement of professionals, be they plasterers or goldsmiths, to take their skills where they could. On the seemingly endless spirit of charity he found in the giving of charity and the support of waqfs and free madrasas and hospitals for all classes. All this moral infrastructure drew from a single well, the concept of Ummah. Let us for a moment reflect on Ibn Battuta's descriptive accuracy. First, he appears to have regarded reportage in terms of information that might prove useful to others. The door of the hours served as a timekeeper for commerce. Second, he had a sense of significant detail. The number of public witnesses in the notary stalls testifies to society in which bonded word and accurate memory are almost one and the same. When Ibn Battuta memorized the Quran, he embraced the collective assumption of the time that the mind can be relied on for accuracy, just as our era relies on writing and microchips. Thus, in his descriptions, he was doing for his world something like what satellite television does for ours. And finally, it is striking not only that we can almost smell the cooking fires and hear the dogs he describes whining at the braised meat stalls, but also that he appears to have so clearly understood how the common moments of daily life link us all, no matter in what place or time we live.
and reading the comprehensive unabridged travelogues of Ibn Battuta, Ibn Jubayr and others, we gain a humbling yet embracing sense of our own place within civilization's long endurance. 7 centuries lie between Ibn Battuta and us, yet his words collapse them until we can feel many of the same things that he does. In Damascus, Ibn Battuta also had quite a bit to say about the waqfs.
The variety and expenditure of the religious endowments of Damascus are beyond computation. They are endowments for the aid of persons who cannot undertake the Hajj, out of which are paid the expenses of those who go in their stead. They are endowments to dow a poor woman for marriage. There are others to free prisoners. There are endowments in aid of travelers, out of the revenues of which they are given food, clothing, and the expenses of conveyance to their countries. There are civic endowments for the improvement and paving of the streets, because all the lanes in Damascus have sidewalks on either side, on which foot passengers walk, while those who ride the roadway use the center. One day I passed a young servant who had dropped a Chinese porcelain dish, which was broken to bits. A number of people collected around him and suggested, "Gather up the pieces and take them to the custodian of the endowment for utensils." He did so, and when the endowment custodian saw the broken pieces, he gave the boy money to buy a new plate. The benefaction is indeed a mender of hearts.
Of Damascus's 171 waqfs, Ibn Battuta reports 10 were endowed by the Sultan, 11 by court officials, 25 by merchants, 43 by members of the ulama, and 82 by military officials. Ibn Battuta sheltered at waqfs during hardship periods and in outlying towns and cities too. And with the new moon of the month of Shawwal, it was from Damascus towards Medina and thence to Mecca that Ibn Battuta turned. Onwards to the Holy Land, inshallah, in segment 11.
The Global Village has been researched and compiled by Hafiza Rayhana Umar. Narrated by Tufail Patel, overseen by Mufti Yusuf Musaji, a production of Radio Islam.